First Fruits, an Apostolic Perspective. Chapter 19. Fearless, Faithful First Fruits. First Fruits are probably the most courageous and daring expressions of all forms of financial giving. It literally takes great courage and faith to obey. Your love for and honor of God, His Word, and His servants has got to be strong. Your faith must be strong and robust too. As a bondservant of Christ, your obedience must be reflexive and reflective of your internal steadfast and resolute commitment to please Christ, your Master. Generally, two broad factors prevent complete financial obedience, namely, the love of money and the fear of not having enough money. Of these two, I think the latter is probably the most powerful force in robbing God's people of the total blessing associated with financial obedience. When we are governed by a spirit of poverty, lack, and the fear of not having enough resources for our personal needs, we evidence an orphan mentality that is in contradiction to the assured mindset we should have as sons of God, that God, our Father, will take good care of us, especially when we obediently subscribe to His righteous principles. The spirit of fear will force you to find seemingly valid justifications for your non-observance of financial giving, especially first fruits. Do not forget God. When Israel offered their tithes and first fruits, as laid out in Deuteronomy chapter 26, they were commanded to make this declaration: I have not eaten of it while mourning, nor have I removed any of it while I was unclean, nor offered any of it to the dead. I have listened to the voice of the Lord my God. I have done according to all that you have commanded me. Deuteronomy chapter 26, verse 14. No excuse or reason for not offering the tithe and first fruits was good enough. The offerer had to ensure that no domestic need, in brackets, even like a funeral, no external circumstance, no matter how urgent, painful, or traumatic, was reason enough for them not to observe the first fruits and tithe. They would also declare that in doing so, they would not forget the Lord's commandments. Note the previous verse before Deuteronomy chapter 26, verse 14, referenced above. You shall say before the Lord your God, I have removed the sacred portion from my house, and also have given it to the Levite and the alien, the orphan, and the widow, according to all your commandments, which you have commanded me. I have not transgressed nor forgotten any of your commandments. Deuteronomy chapter 26, verse 13. Note here above that the tithe, in brackets, as is the first fruits, is regarded as the sacred portion, which must be removed from your house and given to God. Another term for sacred is holy, which means something separated unto God for sacred use as opposed to common use. The first fruits and tithes are not for our common use, but are to be directed toward God for holy use. Someone once said, money is called filthy lucre or unrighteous mammon, but it becomes holy lucre and righteous when given to God. Faithfulness in financial giving, in the text quoted above, is equated to not forgetting God. When is God forgotten? God is forgotten whenever His principles are no longer adhered to. Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping His commandments and His ordinances and His statutes, which I am commanding you today. Deuteronomy chapter 8 and verse 11. Any expression of disobedience, including the non-observance of the first fruits, tithes, and offerings, would equate to forgetting God. We factor God out of our minds and lives when we disobey His commandments. Many people would not readily admit that they forget God, but the measure of remembering Him is simply gauged by the degree of obedience to His word. In giving Hannah a son, Samuel, the Bible clearly indicates that it was so because the Lord remembered Hannah. 1 Samuel chapter 1 verse 19. Hannah's giving of Samuel back to the Lord was her remembering the Lord. Brackets T.D. Jakes. To Hannah, Samuel represented a first fruit offering, since he was her firstborn son. When God remembers us and answers our desperate cries, we often forget Him by failing to give back to Him expressions of our honor and gratitude. Remember God when He remembers you. Give in and by faith. The righteous or just live by faith. Faith is an unshakable belief in God, that He is your Father who will adequately take care of you and reward you as you diligently seek Him, especially in respect to your obedience to all His principles. Without faith, it is impossible to please God. Everything we do and the way we function as believers must always be according to the principle of faith. Our financial giving too must be conducted in and by faith. As already indicated in this writing, the ultimate purpose of faith is to bring us to a place of instantaneous obedience to God and His word. By faith, Abel offered to God a better sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained the testimony that he was righteous, God testifying about his gifts. And through faith, though he is dead, he still speaks. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 4. Abel offered first fruits by faith. All offerings to God, including financial offerings, must be given by faith. Hannah's faith is to be applauded, not so much for the fact that she could trust God for a son, but more so that her trust in God was profoundly displayed in her courageous and faithful giving of Samuel to God as first fruits. In brackets, more on this in chapter 23. Faith is expressed by works or practical obedience. It is always rooted in a positive response to the word of the Lord. Faith comes by hearing God's word. Faith does not consider natural circumstances for it to act. We walk by faith and not by sight. 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 7. So, when God calls upon us to give even beyond our ability, 2 Corinthians 8:3, it requires faith-filled response. One of the greatest factors eroding faith-filled obedience is an undue focus on natural, outward circumstances or phenomena that directly oppose or militates against the conviction and action that faith seeks to produce. Abraham did not consider the deadness of his wife's womb when God promised him that he would become a father of many nations. Romans chapter 4, verse 16 to 21. His immediate external circumstance did not condition his true inward reality. He became convinced that God calls things that are not as though they are. God chooses to describe our current reality based upon what he has already accomplished from before time began. Faith propels our sight to focus on that which is already done, even though the physical evidence of it is absent. Faith requires active obedience and a movement towards the accomplishment of the thing that his word or commandment has determined or mandated for us. Fear, an enemy of faith. The opposite of faith is not unbelief. Unbelief simply indicates the absence of faith. Fear is the opposite of faith. Fear neutralizes the expression of faith. God requires us to have faith for him to move on our behalf. The devil requires fear for him to operate efficiently in the lives of people. What faith is to God, fear is to the devil. One of the most powerful hindrances to giving lavishly is financial fear, or fear of needs not being met. An undue focus on natural circumstances, which usually erodes faith, produces fear, unbelief, and doubt. All of these are enemies of faith. In reference to biblical principles of financial giving, many believe the truth of them and may even have no trace of doubt regarding the working of the principles, yet may be bound by fear and thus paralyzed to venture forth to obey the principles. Giving financially presupposes that the giver has no insecurity about God's capacity to provide, protect, and sustain. Fear causes people to be gripped by a withholding spirit rather than by a spirit of generous giving. Fear, unlike faith, is preoccupied with the current negative external state of affairs. These instill a sense of insecurity. Faith is focused on the faithfulness of God's person or nature, the integrity of his biblically rooted principles, the reliability of his promises, and the urgency of his purposes to be done. Thus, faith acts and obeys God's word in defiance of natural circumstances, because it has sight into a completely higher realm of understanding. As already indicated in this writing, spiritual sight, the measure of light and understanding in your eye, in brackets your spirit, will propel your obedience to seemingly difficult commands of God. We need to shut the eye or mind of the unrenewed areas of our soul that tends to rival our commitment to obey God. First fruits, as indeed does all other expressions of financial giving, requires fearless, faithful obedience. Fearless giving preserves us in times of global economic disaster. This passage in Ecclesiastes, referenced below, hints at the fact that our sustained, unimpeded financial giving is in part motivated by the fact that misfortune may occur on the earth, and that our financial behavior in respect to giving is not to be regulated by the negative conditions or indicators of economic recession or depression. Cast your bread on the surface of the waters, for you will find it after many days. Divide your portion to seven, or even to eight, for you do not know what misfortune may occur on the earth. If the clouds are full, they pour out rain upon the earth, and whether a tree falls towards the south or toward the north, or wherever the tree falls, there it lies. He who watches the wind will not sow, and he who looks at the clouds will not reap. Just as you do not know the path of the wind and how bones are formed in the womb of the pregnant woman, so you do not know the activity of God who makes all things. Sow your seed in the morning and do not be idle in the evening, for you do not know whether morning or evening sowing will succeed, or whether both of them alike will be good. Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verse 1 to 6. Verse 2 indicates that we must give, in brackets, divide, portions to seven and preferably to eight. The number seven denotes perfection, completion, or rest. Giving to seven denotes giving that is perfect, that is, thoroughly compliant to all biblical principles governing giving. Seven also symbolizes rest and completion. When you come into rest regarding financial obedience, you are at peace with compliance to all biblical financial principles. From this disposition, you can start to go beyond seven to giving to eight. The number eight indicates new beginnings. It is a step beyond seven and requires or presupposes seven to attain eight. This would equate to giving beyond your ability. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 3, which implies making serious sacrifices in some expressions of financial obedience. This is going beyond what is required, beyond the law, to being governed by the Spirit in your giving. As we bring perfection to our giving in obedience, we will enter rest financially and can look forward to new beginnings, especially as God brings us through difficult economic seasons personally or globally. In verse 4 above, there are two things that prevent the sowing of financial seed, namely, watching the wind and looking at the clouds. Israel was an agricultural community, so references to the wind and clouds speak of economic indicators. modern-day equivalents would be salary, interest rates, inflation rates, share prices, etc. You cannot and must not determine your commitment to obeying God's financial principles based upon prevailing economic conditions in your life personally, in your country nationally, or the world globally. Hence, verse 6 encourages us to sow perpetually in the morning and evening of each day, symbolizing that financial sowing ought to be consistent, a lifestyle rather than an occasional event. Giving is not something you try. Giving is someone you are. Giving is a lifestyle you live and is not event dependent or an event in and of itself. Do not regard the economic winds of recession and the clouds of need and poverty, but open your hand and release even the little financial seed you have in obedience to the commandments of God, and observe how great and abundant harvest the Lord will bless you with. The reason provided for excelling in financial giving in Ecclesiastes chapter 11 and verse 2 is, you do not know what misfortune will come upon the earth. Again, I reiterate that financial obedience is God's system of immunizing His sons from the ravaging effects of domestic or global economic disaster. Economic recessions and depressions are also times in which we should heighten our resolve to give and by God's grace seek to excel more in it by faith. Every new level of harvest demands a new level of seed. I encourage you to trust God that you will break your current level or capacity of giving and access a new domain of harvest, which is not just financial. As sons of God, we are to be principled people. External economic conditions do not determine our obedience financially, but God's principles, which do not change with circumstances. Isaac sowed in famine. Abraham, the father of faith, was required by God to offer Isaac as first fruits. Refer to Genesis chapter 22. This offering is truly characteristic of first fruits because Isaac represented his only son, his firstborn by heaven's reckoning. Isaac fully complied with Abraham's intent to offer him as a sacrifice. He is a very cooperative first fruits offering. He walked to the place where he willingly laid down his life to be sacrificed, in brackets, as Jesus would many years after him. All financial giving must be uncoerced and flow freely and willingly, being born from an internal conviction established by revelation. Isaac is thus the embodiment or personification of the first fruits principle. As he lay on that altar to be sacrificed, Abraham was stopped and was shown the provision of the Lord in the lamb which was caught in a bush. Further, a revelation that God is provision, in brackets Jehovah Jireh, was unveiled to both Abraham and to Isaac. First fruits unlock the provision of God and the revelation that God is provision. Isaac, the personification of the first fruits principle, never knew lack, nor had a fear of not having provision in his entire life. Economic famine naturally brings fear and uncertainty and might cause some to enter financial disobedience. But he, without being dictated to by fear, sowed in a time of famine and reaped 100-fold in the same year. Now Isaac sowed in that land and reaped in the same year 100-fold, and the Lord blessed him, and the man became rich and continued to grow richer until he became very wealthy. For he had possessions of flocks and herds and a great household, so that the Philistines envied him. Genesis chapter 26, verse 12 to 14. Isaac's willingness to lay himself down as a first fruits offering set a foundation in his life such that any sowing of seed on his part will be guaranteed a harvest, as evidenced in the scriptural passage above. 100-fold harvest is the highest potential harvest anyone could receive from seed sown. It is literally 100 times the original seed sown. What is amazing is that Isaac sowed in a time of famine. Farmers do not sow seeds in famine, for that would be futile, as the natural conditions of no water would kill the seed. That would be a total waste to sow seed in famine. But Isaac sowed. I believe that this was so because he was the representation of the first fruits principle. He became the first fruit so that any further sowing of financial seed generated a 100-fold increase. Become the embodiment of the first fruits principle that you seek to enact, so that subsequent financial seed sowing will be blessed with a 100-fold return, even in times of economic famine. First fruits break the natural limitations that negative conditions in the earth place on our need to be well provided for, especially in seasons of economic famine. Again, this is a reminder that the unsatisfactory or negative external conditions of economies do not dictate or determine whether we sow or not. Sow in tears, but reap in joy. When the Lord brought back the captive ones of Zion, we were like those who dream. Then our mouth was filled with laughter, and our tongue with joyful shouting. Then they said among the nations, "The Lord has done great things for them. The Lord has done great things for us. We are glad. Restore our captivity, O Lord, as the streams in the south. Those who sow in tears shall reap with joyful shouting. He who goes to and fro, weeping, carrying his bag of seed, shall indeed come again with a shout of joy, bringing his sheaves with him." Psalm 126, verse 1 to 6. The psalmist here celebrates the return to Zion from Babylonian captivity, in brackets verse 1 to 3, and prays for full and complete restoration in Zion, in brackets verse 4. Verses 5 and 6 describe the process of this restoration, namely sacrificial sowing. Psalm 126 is part of the Song of Ascents a group of 15 psalms, in brackets, Psalm 120 to 134, classified according to the titles Psalms of Degrees or Ascent. These were sung at the beginning of the worship services at the temple and by those who were traveling up to Jerusalem three times a year to celebrate the three broadly designated feasts, namely Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacles. At these feasts, various offerings were offered. So this song would be sung en route to Jerusalem. There, seed would be sown, first fruits, tithes, and offerings, and done sacrificially, in brackets, in tears, symbolically, but also in celebration of the anticipated joyful harvest. Thus, the song sung would fuel faith and commitment to the process of journeying toward a place of obedience. The reference to sowing in tears does not refer to sowing with grief, grudgingly, or out of compulsion. Rather, it refers to sowing when it is difficult to do so or when your natural circumstances dictate that you should not be sowing. The sowing is still cheerful and willing, yet it demands tremendous sacrifice. The promise is then made that those who sow in this manner will come again rejoicing, bringing in sheaves of abundant harvest with them. Psalm 126 was also sung in celebration of the great things God had done for them in delivering them from Babylonian captivity, in brackets, verse 1 to 4. Financial giving in any form is a symbolic celebration of God's goodness, salvation, and deliverance in our lives. The man from Baal Shalisha gave Elisha first fruits in a time of famine. As referenced earlier in this writing, a particular man gave first fruits within the context of widespread famine with amazing results. 2 Kings chapter 4, verse 38 to 44, in brackets, refer to chapter 17. Fear prevents the release of finances. During seasons of economic famine, people generally do not give. These seasons represent the greatest opportune times in which to give rather than to slacken off. Isaac's natural environment of economic famine did not affect his culture of sowing seed. He functioned by principle and not by prevailing external conditions. He was never need-oriented and never doubted God's capacity to provide for him. All this was founded in that experience of obedience of him and his father on Mount Moriah, where he became the incarnation of the first fruits principle. Instead of diminishing in terms of resources in a season of famine, he increased exponentially, in total contradiction and defiance to his natural, depressed economic environment. Isaac transitioned from being need-focused to being principle-fixated. When your present conditions are not ideal or conducive for you to sustain your commitment to God's financial principles, I encourage you to maintain your obedience presently because you are sowing into your future and establishing a solid foundation for the preservation of God to be your reality in times of widespread global economic crisis. In the parable of talents, recorded in Matthew chapter 25, the servant who buried his talent did so because of fear. "And I was afraid and went away and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours." Matthew chapter 25, verse 25. One talent was equivalent to 15 years' wages of labor. The servant with five talents made five more talents, and the servant with two talents made two more talents. Both servants received rulership positions from their master. The servant with one talent buried his money for fear that he would not be able to duplicate or multiply it. He had a fear of parting with money. To those servants who put the money to wise use, more was given to them, because they proved that money could flow through them and was not going to be dammed up in them. To release finances into the kingdom of God, you cannot be governed by fear. Apostolic command broke the spirit of fear in the widow of Zarephath. The widow of Zarephath's first fruit to Elijah was discussed in the previous chapter. The last oil and meal she used to make bread for Elijah first symbolizes the first fruit, in that after she gave, she would have nothing left. She gave her all. She almost did not obey God to give because of famine and fear. These two combinations, famine and fear, are lethal in paralyzing sons of God with financial disobedience. It was the word, in brackets, doctrine of Elijah, an apostolic prophetic type, that broke the fear in her and brought her to a place of obedience, to a clear command of God. In brackets, refer to the previous chapter. As you read, hear in your spirit God's apostolic word breaking fear in you to obey God's financial principles. The name Zarephath means place of refining, smelting house for melting and refining metals. God is refining or purifying our financial obedience. God requires total honor from us financially. He wants pure and unadulterated financial mentalities and patterns of financial obedience. In this place, this widow's house was detoxed from a spirit of fear, which probably dominated and pervaded the entire land as the ravaging effects of the famine intensified. Proceed in fearless faith and obey God's financial principles. Reflect. Point 1. God is forgotten whenever his principles are no longer adhered to. Have you forgotten God based on the biblical definition of forgetting God? Point 2. Two opposing factors influence our obedience to God, namely, faith and fear. Fear propels obedience, whereas fear's intent is to paralyze our will, thus negating obedience. Have you ever had to contend with these conflicting factors when considering your intention to obey God's financial principles? To what degree did each factor prevail based on where your focus was? Point 3. Negative economic conditions are no grounds to withhold any form of financial giving. This sounds ludicrous. Demonstrate the validity of this view biblically.